Life is good, but the right coverage makes it so much better. Presidia means power, protection, and freedom to do the things you love. Presidia, the personal accident coverage that lets you live your best life. Today. Call your Guardian Life agent today or 430-4675 and live easy.
And with that, we say a very special good evening to Dr. Renee Boyce. Good evening, Doc.
Hi, good evening, Gregston. How are you?
I'm not as good as I was last week, but still alive, so I'm happy to be here.
Yes, well, I think being alive is preferred to being dead.
Indeed. I can't argue there.
Yes, so some people might say that things are so terrible with them physically, they'd rather be dead, but...
We try to
live in hope. So good evening to everybody and welcome to the Better Health Radio Show. As you heard from Gregston, that our show is sponsored this week by Guardian, and we'll be jumping in with our guests from Guardian a little later on. And we do have a medical guest for you. He's on standby. We're just giving him some time to get himself completely sorted out. And in the meantime, to reach us here, I keep seeing us here in the studio. To reach Gregston over there all by his lonesome in the studio, 434-1790. And if you want to send your query by WhatsApp, 266-4862. So those numbers again, 434-1790 and WhatsApp 266-4862. One of the things that we want to put in place is so that we can answer all of your queries. We are going to start back our email account so that you can send your queries in by email and we will answer them and send them back out to you for those of you who don't get into the show on time. And as usual, we do have a few shout outs. I always get trouble with that, but I'm going to say shout outs. Our first one is to Nancy Mitchell. She listens every week. So good evening to her and good evening to the Mitchell family over there in Eden Lodge. And we also want to send a big shout out to the Toppin family in Chance Hall. Shout out to all of you over there. So this evening, I'm going to jump right in with just a few reminders. Just to remind persons, we are having as our guest somebody from an insurance company. And what we are asking, we're kindly asking, is that you do not use the program as an opportunity to air your grouses. This is not the forum. If you wish to speak of a good experience that you might have had, well, certainly, but we persons are not here to defend themselves in the case of a bad situation. Therefore, we would really appreciate it if you not air those grouses. Any questions that you might have had about insurance, now would be a good time to ask. And with no further ado, let me introduce our guest to you this evening. We'll start with our personnel from Guardian General. Mr. Carlos Barton is an insurance advisor at Guardian Life of the Caribbean, the largest indigenous insurance company in the Caribbean. And he has spent 13 years in the finance sector between banking, accounting, and insurance firms. He is a father of one and an avid footballer, truly believing in living an active lifestyle. Good evening to you, Carlos, and welcome.
Good evening, Dr. Boyce. Thanks for having me. Pleasure to be here.
Yes. And we are going to have several questions for you later on in the program, but let me introduce a guest who is no stranger to the majority of persons here in Barbados. And believe it or not, he is one of my favorite people. Every time we've been in the studio together, you see, you can't see, but Gregston is in the studio.
He is welcome anytime.
Because, wow, the times we've had in studio, I believe that we've had him twice before in the studio. So this is going to be his third appearance, I believe, on the show. And that certainly does speak to his wealth of knowledge and his willingness to be with us on the show. We have none other than Dr. Jerry Emtage with us this evening. Good evening, Dr. Emtage.
Yeah, he just has to unmute his mic.
Yes, remember, unmute.
Unmute your microphone. He's still going, but
I'm still muted.
Your microphone. You need to unmute your microphone.
Or perhaps from your end, Greg, so you can unmute him.
No, he has to unmute his microphone.
No, you can. You have control to unmute him as well. In the meantime, while we get that sorted out, let's go over to Carlos, and we're going to ask you. Aha!
Can you hear me?
Yes, no, we have you now loud and
no,
clear.
He has done it.
Good evening to all, Dr. Boyce. Thanks for having me. Other members of the discussion panel, and to you, my friend, who is in charge of distributing this song to people across the nation.
Yes, good evening, Doc. Good evening.
So we're going to start with Dr. Emtage, since he managed to jump back in on time. And we are discussing, for those of you who have not guessed by now, we are going to be discussing prostate cancer. This is Breast Awareness Month. Yes, we are fully aware, we know that, but we thought we would give the men an opportunity to be featured during this month as well, so that they wouldn't feel left out. So this is why we're having this discussion here with Dr. Emtage and with Carlos. So Dr. Emtage, right over to you. What is the purpose of a prostate? If we're going to end up having cancer in this particular organ anyhow, what is the purpose of the prostate?
Look, the prostate is a structure which essentially sits at the base of the bladder. It's like a donut. The urethra passes through the center of this structure. It really and truly is only of importance as we are in the reproductive age group. It produces something called PSA, which is instrumental in the liquefaction of semen, such that the sperm can swim. I mean, that's about all. Other than that, it gives trouble as we get older and as we escape the reproductive sort of age group. It becomes big in a benign way. Not non-malignant, non-cancerous. It causes obstruction, difficulty with passing your urine, etc., and a myriad of other problems, and it can be associated with malignancy. Now, this occurs in both men and, interestingly, dogs. Many an old dog will die because of an enlarged prostate with damage to the kidneys based on obstruction and the inability to pass its urine.
Okay, so we are going to just take a mental note of that analogy between men and dogs, and we are going to press.
I'm not quite sure why you're chuckling at that.
Is it because
when your gender gets vexed with us, the quick thing to do is to call us dogs?
No, I am chuckling because I can see the facial expressions of Carlos and Greyston. That's why I'm chuckling.
But I know we have a guest who's going to take good care of you, so we don't have to even jump in and say anything. Thanks, Doc.
So now that Carlos has been able to gather himself again, so what's the difference between a health insurance policy and a critical illness policy? Because certainly we're talking about prostate cancer, and this is something that really does become critical to an individual. So what's the difference between those two?
Well, really between the two is really quite simple. A regular health plan, really, it reimburses you on your medical expenses, and it covers things like hospitalization costs and other things you may incur. Well, we go to doctor visits, stuff of that nature. Whereas with the critical illness plan, it pays you a wrong sum. Once you're diagnosed with, well, I would say it's up to about 17 to 19 critical illnesses that you can have, but cancer being one of the leading ones. It also covers stroke and heart attacks and things of that nature, but cancer is one of the leading ones that you would find that it covers.
Okay, so Dr. Emtage, in your initial statements, you had spoken about the prostate being located at the base of the bladder. For those of you who tuned in a few minutes late, we're discussing prostate cancer today. And when we hear prostate cancer, and we're talking about men and general male health, we hear this term all the time, PSA, PSA. What is it? You know, what is the PSA? From where does it come? And how is it useful in diagnosing prostate cancer?
The PSA is essentially a blood test, and the PSA itself is an esterase. It's an enzyme. What happens is, as a man ejaculates, the semen is exceedingly viscous, and that is essentially a way of packaging, such that, you know, if he ejaculates in an area where there's, you know, a sort of conception is not possible, it is viscous. But when you ejaculate and you are in, and for the purpose of procreation, you have to basically liquefy the semen to allow the sperm to swim. And that is what PSA does. It's a serine esterase or protease. And it breaks down that stuff to allow essentially the viscosity of the semen to become liquefied. So in other words, in some individuals who have problems with getting their respective partners pregnant, it may be on the basis of increased viscosity and not allowing essentially the sperm to swim. When that happens, there's a substance that one can put into the vagina prior to intercourse, which will facilitate liquefaction and enhance conception.
All right, so Dr. Emtage, there are two words there that I'm sure our listeners, some of them are not certain what it is. So first, when I hear the word viscous, I'm thinking thick.
Yes, you're thinking, or like, okay, think about treacle, which is
molasses.
Essentially a very sort of concentrated sugar like molasses. If sperm is in something like molasses, it can't swim. So it can't achieve its objective of getting where it needs to get to induce conception. So you need to liquefy it. You need to take that molasses, make it turn into like something as liquid as is water, therefore allowing the sperm to swim to that area where it needs to be to induce conception.
Okay, understood. And so different levels of the PSA, and we're going to talk about this shortly, would tell us different things about the prostate at different stages in a man's life. So we're going to discuss that in a little bit. Carlos, last week we had spoken to Nisha, and we take this opportunity to say hi to Nisha, if she is listening. We had spoken about critical illness and health plans and so on. And one of the questions that had arisen was whether or not it makes sense to get a critical illness plan in addition to your general health plan. What would your advice be to an individual?
Yeah, well, that's a very common question that we often get. And the answer to that would be yes. It would still make sense to get a critical illness plan along with a health plan, whether it's you have the health plan on your own or with your workplace. The reason being is because, well, most people who do have health plans, first of all, they're not aware that there's even a limit that you have on what you can claim and so forth. So if you go around and ask most people and you ask them what's the limit on their health plan, they don't even know. That's the first aspect of it. The next aspect is that it covers things when things happen, like the hospitalization occurs and you get your medical bills and expenses, but there's still a lot of things that you have to do and pay on your own. Whereas with the critical illness plan, is a case you get a wrong lump sum one time. Pretty much is what he said to the first question. You get a lump sum based on the coverage you have, based on what you set up for yourself and what you decided is best for you. And it covers all your medical bills for the amount that you said you needed to have covered. What happens, and a lot of people don't understand, is with cancer and different ailments that you may encounter, is your life still has to change. You get expenses and bills. I think last study, a 2014 study, showed that the average cost of cancer treatment or even cancer medication on average is $4,300 US. And that's not even the chemotherapy or anything. That is literally just the medication. Then you can't work and things like that. So the things that people have to take into mind is health insurance. Some parts of health insurance can't cover all of those other needs, whereas the critical illness comes in and plays that role and fills that role.
Okay, so it is advisable to maybe take out that critical illness policy. And of course, the persons over there at Guardian would be willing and able to work with you to come up with a plan that's best suited for your pocket. As a matter of fact, let's take in some news from those persons at Guardian.
Life is good, but the right coverage makes it so much better. Presidia means power, protection, and freedom to do the things you love. Presidia, the personal accident coverage that lets you live your best life today. Call your Guardian Life agent today or 430-4675 and live easy.
Yes, indeed, Doc. Once in a while, I'll have to interrupt you in your commentary with regards to cancer to bring you a word from our sponsors, Guardian Life of the Caribbean. So, yes, I'll have to stop you once in a while. That's okay with you, I'm quite sure. But before I get back to you, there's a query here on the WhatsApp. Nothing related to cancer, but I think I'll still ask you, though. They said, good evening, Gredston. Can you please ask the doctor what causes cramp in your feet?
There are several causes to cramp in the feet. Very quickly, we can think about local causes, and we can think about causes generally in the body. So the circulation to your feet, for example, the arteries that supply blood, perhaps if they are blocked, you can get something called cramp or claudication in those muscles in the feet. That's one example. Those persons who have venous insufficiency, where the valves in the veins are not competent and they allow blood to flow backward as opposed to being only in one direction, one of the symptoms that those persons might experience would be cramping in the feet. And then you can think electrolyte causes, for example, if you have problems with your calcium, if you have problems with your potassium or sodium. And we know that athletes who run, for example, and they run several races after, if they're not rehydrated and if they don't put back in those salts, they get cramp. So these are just a few causes for possible causes for cramp in the feet. But as we always say on the show, whatever symptoms you might be having at any particular point in time, make sure you pick it up with your general practitioner, either in the public or private setting, and have that discussion. Never sit down at home and assume that it is just cramp. So I hope that answers the individual's question. And for those of you, again, who've just joined us, it is now 17 minutes in Barbados and across the Eastern Cap, 17 minutes past six. And we're talking to Dr. Jerry Emtage. Dr. Emtage, what are the risk factors you find persons have for prostate cancer? And then I have a really big question for you after that one. What are the risk factors for prostate cancer, apart from being male?
Oh, he has to unmute his mic again.
He got to unmute again, Dr. Emtage.
Good. I'm not quite familiar with this. Are you hearing me now?
Yes, we got
loud
you
loud and clear.
Good. Right. Risk factors essentially are, you know, I mean, all the things that you would take into account in terms of risk factors for heart disease, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Our who we are as a people, in our population of our population of Black people, we have the higher incidence. We're like two to three times that of whites, and probably even as much as 3 to 4 times that of, let's say, Chinese and Japanese. So we know we have a high incidence of it here. The other issue that is that we have not been able to sort of, you know, get to the bottom of is, where do we find ourselves with regards to the penetration of problems like BRCA1 and 2 genes within our population? We don't know. We just know that it is exceedingly high in our population, just as it is high in the Black folks in North America. Some people talk about exposure to cadmium. Some people talk about exposure to fats, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Anything that, you know, is not done in an abstemious sort of way will cause you problems with any cancer and any sort of, you know, cardiovascular issues, diabetes, you know, high blood pressure, obesity. So, I mean, can I pinpoint one reason for this? Because we see lots of people in the practice in the country where there is absolutely no family history of prostate cancer. It is occurring de novo.
So the best thing we can suggest to those individuals is always about having your screening test done. And on the issue of testing, we are going to ask this one big question that I'm sure is on the mind of every male. Do I have to get a doctor's finger up my bottom? Do I? Is it necessary?
Look, there is essentially, some will argue that if you want to be puristic and puritanical about it, everybody should have a rectal exam. I cannot see it as being necessary in individuals with very low PSAs. Mind you, however, there was one guy who shocked me because I've never seen this before. And this was a young guy who had issues with voiding, and he was only 37 years old. And he thought it was prostatitis. He behaved as such. Rectal examination suggested that was the case. And we know that prostatitis, or inflammation of the prostate, which is exceedingly common in our population, not a sexually transmitted sort of disease. You can't get it from anybody or give it to anybody. other than, let's say, to say, in societies where chlamydia is exceedingly common, it's not the penetration here, not that much, I do not believe. Some individuals can pass chlamydia on to men who can develop prostatitis on that basis. That is not a common cause of prostatitis here. Now, in that individual with prostatitis, the PSA can go up. This young guy had an elevated PSA. We treated him. It did not come down. And then I said, look, you know, this is unusual. I mean, one does not want to sort of push a biopsy under this circumstance in somebody so young. He had a biopsy and it came back showing malignancy. Now, the dilemma here was, this is a 37-year-old guy who will possibly run the issue with problems with regards to wanting to have more kids, the issues with possible problems with potency post-surgery. So what we did with this youngster, we sent off his tissue for a further pathological evaluation before we make that decision as to how we are going to handle him. So in that circumstance, this is the cutoff point for PSA testing is 40. This young man was 37. I've never seen this.
All right. So there is always somebody who is outside the curve. And when we say outside the curve, you know, we mean that there's somebody who's usually above the average or below the average for things in medicine.
But let me say this, Dr. Boyce. There was a study by a guy called Edson Pontes way back in the day where he looked at young men in Detroit who essentially died from whatever reason, or the vehicle accidents, whatever, but they're definitely not prostate. And they did histological studies of the prostates of these guys. And he found evidence of prostate cancer in 35-year-olds.
Wow.
The problem that we also have is this. You operate on somebody, you take the prostate out. If you think that PSA is the sort of sine qua non for this disease, you take the PSA out, the prostate out, after the necessary work shows that it is localized. And the PSA drops to 0.0 or less than 0.04. That is pretty much confirmatory that you've removed all prostatic tissue. 10 to 15 years later, they come back with a PSA that's going up. Now, the question is, what causes that? And the answer, and this is the similarity between those two things. If an individual has residual prostate cancer that was not removed at time of surgery, why isn't it not expressing PSA immediately? What is the basis for the delay? As is the 35-year-old with histological evidence of prostate cancer, why is his PSA normal?
Normal, yeah. I see. So there's much for us to understand in the world of medicine.
If you walk into a doctor's office and see patients on the basis of arrogance, you will hurt people. Because as you know, you go into the office and there's something that's going to make you look like an ass at least once a week. Hello?
Yes, we're still here with you, Dr. Emtich. Okay, so Carlos, Dr. Emtich mentioned just now about trying to investigate prostate cancers. And one of the words that he mentioned was biopsy. Is prostate biopsy covered by insurance?
Yes, it is, Dr. Boyce. Oh, what happened with prostate biopsy with that particular test? When you get that done, it's covered by your insurance. And then, God forbid, you get the diagnosis that there is something there. There's a chance of prostate cancer with the diagnosis. Then that's really the critical illness comes into play. And you get the lump sum to aid you with whatever expenses you may incur later, change of life, loss of income, and stuff of that nature. And to speak to that matter, also not only as an insurance agent, but even before I got into the profession, I can speak to experiencing that both with people that I know, both on the side of being an agent, and also before getting into the career. And in seeing how the critical illness plan would help some of these people well in their time of need, that's one of the big reasons for me actually deciding to enter into the career of becoming an insurance agent, so that me, myself, can help people in that same way.
I think one of the things, and that's a very good point, Carlos, one of the things that I've learned or I'm becoming knowledgeable about in recent times is the fact that in life you have to find a purpose greater than yourself. It makes no sense that what you do, yes, you need money and you need money to pay bills. That's standard. However, your purpose on this earth has to be about something greater than yourself, or you're wasting your time down here. Sure. I believe that's just my belief.
Dr. Boyce, can I say something? 1 minute.
Yes, please. I was just going to come to you.
With regards to biopsies, look, the whole thing with regards to prostate cancer is changing, and it's changing quite sort of drastically. Yeah, an elevated PSA, and we've said this on this show over and over, does mm-hmm. not necessarily mean that you have cancer.
Correct.
Now, what has happened is the number of transrectal biopsies done on the basis of an elevated PSA is essentially too high. If you're going to do, a urologist is going to do 50 biopsies and only 10 are positive, he is over biopsying people. Now, how can you sort out whether or not an individual with an elevated PSA needs to be taken further? And one way that you can do this is essentially say, look, let me put you on antibiotics for a month, and we're going to repeat your PSA in 6 weeks. Now, this individual may not have symptoms of prostatitis, such as frequency, urgency, pain on ejaculation, sluggish erections, low back pain, a general feeling of lassitude and lethargy. He may not have those symptoms at all. And at the end of the day, when you go and biopsy the individual, the pathologist comes back and tells you the tissue shows acute and chronic inflammation, no malignancy. So we know that there's something called asymptomatic prostatitis. Bear this in mind. When you biopsy an individual, you're causing inflammation. So you can actually cause a surge in PSA, which now scares the patient. But you know fully well that's inflammatory. Its origin and basis is inflammatory. So what the world is telling you now is to jump to a transrectal ultrasound is essentially not the way to go. It is a blind biopsy. There are no characteristic ultrasonographic features of prostate cancer. I have seen them in isoechoic prostates, hypoechoic, and hyperechoic. So what we do by and large is we say, okay, we're going to treat you with antibiotics. Prostate feels normal. No evidence of prostatitis. Fine. We're going to repeat your PSA in 6 weeks. If the PSA stays or goes up, then I say to them, you got a choice. I will send your blood for 4K score, which is the test that we send off to New Jersey. If this comes back high, it doesn't tell me to go to transrectal ultrasound. It tells me to go to an MRI of the prostate, which is a hell of a lot more sensitive and specific than is the transrectal ultrasound. So what happens then is the radiologist looks at the prostate and says, you know what? This tissue is, it grades it either PIRADS 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5. PIRADS 1 and 2, biopsies unwarranted. PIRADS 3, maybe about 10, anywhere between 10 and 30% may warrant a biopsy. That is dependent upon the urologist and the patient. PIRADS 4 and 5 warrant biopsies. Now, what then happens there is this. There is technology now available which allows you to take that MRI where the radiologist has outlined the area of interest and fuse it to the ultrasound, such that you're now biopsying that specific area. So in other words, this is now beneficial to a man who has a big prostate. A big prostate, if you take 12 cores, the sample error is going to be great. So the more cores you take, the greater the likelihood that you will find something positive. However, that may now tip that man into retention, and now he has to have surgery to get back peeing properly again. So with the MRI fusion, it limits the need for saturation biopsies, which in itself has its own, you know, interplay with morbidity. So then when you do that now, you know, you're coming straight to the area, you biopsy it. Now, where that is interesting also is the individual who has a low PSA, and you biopsy them and you found one area of low-grade cancer. What the technology allows you to do now is basically when you bring him back for his check, to go back to that same needle spot and biopsy it again. If you try to do somebody with on a surveillance protocol with an ordinary ultrasound, man, you just stick in needles in the prostate and you know where you're going. You're shooting blind.
So what has happened with the advancement of medicine is that we're able to do less harm to the patient by being absolutely more specific in where we biopsy, because biopsy always is a ticklish area where when you're not certain, it's a hit and miss, right? So
precisely.
Yeah. So it's better for us to go the way where we're a little more sure. You can't be 100% sure. Never can be.
Carlos will get basically the outline of what that is involved in. We just started it. The technology is here. And we just started by and large looking at it on Friday and last week.
Okay.
We are going to go to commercial though. But before we do that, I just want to say hello to Shelley Miller. There was a remark last week about my being very meticulous and organized. And I'm not going to let that one go. And in Shelley, I have found a sister very, very organized and very, very planned and thought out. Yes. And so good evening, Shelley. Hope that you are listening and enjoying the show. So over to you, Gregson.
Life is good, but the right coverage makes it so much better. Presidia means power, protection, and freedom to do the things you love. Presidia, the personal accident coverage that lets you live your best life. Today. Call your Guardian Life agent today or 430-4675 and live easy.
Big thank you to Guardian Life of the Caribbean bringing you this program, the Better Health Radio Show, of course, presented to you by Dr. Renee Boyce, and she has as her guest Dr. Emptage. And Dr. Emptage, let me just tell you a WhatsApp from London. Made a comment. Hello, good night. This doctor is really funny. He tells it like it is. I love him. Over to you, Doc.
Never a truer word was spoken when it comes to Dr. Jerry Emptage. Over to you, Carlos. I want to ask you a question that has been forwarded by an individual here on my WhatsApp. We haven't spoken with Dr. Emptage. Perhaps we should do this first. Tell me, Dr. Emptage, the diagnosis of prostate cancer. Prostate cancer can be in situ or localized, or it can be outside the confines of the prostate, I guess.
Yes, it is.
Right. Trying to make it as simple as possible for our listeners. So try to make a distinguishment between those two things for us, please. Try to distinguish between those two things, carcinoma in situ and prostate cancer.
I tell you how I explain. Can you hear me, right?
Yes.
I tell you how I explain it to my patients is basically this. I do 12 core biopsies. I create a map. Every tissue taken is sent separately. So I know exactly where this is. And there's a reason for that. If it's on the lateral wall and this patient needs surgery, I might have to compromise the pudendal nerve or the nerve, basically, leading to erectile function. And therefore, that gives me the opportunity to say to the patient, your disease is lateral. If I have difficulty in moving your nerve at that point in time, we may have to sacrifice it. Yeah? No. Let's say when we get this and the diagnosis is made, the patient has to go for a metastatic survey, which usually includes a bone scan and a CT scan if they have low-grade, low-volume disease. If they have high-volume, low-grade, or high volume, high grade, then they must have an MRI, which is much more sensitive than is a CT scan in detecting extra prostatic disease. So when it gets to that point and I need to tell them what they need to do, I say, look, I biopsy you. I took 12 pieces, 4 or 5 pieces of your prostate stroke cancer. So let me look at it like the garrison. You got 5 wild horses from the garrison. I got to make sure you ain't got none in Blackrock, Marleyville, Oystins, or Spiced Tongue. How do I do this? These are the tests that I need to do. When they come back negative, you stage them on the basis of the TNM stage. TNM is tumor, N is nodes, or extra prostatic disease. M is metastases like the bone or other organs. Once the stage is given, then the individual basically can be treated. Once the horse has left the stable, once the horse is to be found in Black Rock, it don't make no sense burning up the garrison. So that individual is not a candidate for curative surgery or curative sort of intervention. That individual is there for palliation. Palliation based on lowering testosterone levels. Testosterone is the food that prostate cancer loves. That benefit does not last forever. So the objective is to use medication to achieve castrate levels. back in the day, they would remove men's testicles. Now I don't do that. You with me? I come with mine and I going back where I come from with mine. So there's no need to get that sort of to get that deep into an individual. So what then happens is individuals need to know that at some point in time, they may become hormone refractory. And what does that mean? When you treat these patients with medication, the PSA should drop. If it starts to rise on medication, it's telling you, this cancer is no longer responding. Mm-hmm. It is becoming hormone refractory. Mm-hmm. And you really don't want to get to that point because I got good medications, but that's $10,000 to $15,000 a month.
Well, this is probably where the critical illness benefit would come in. Carlos, we're going to take a call, but the next, why does carcinoma in situ of the prostate does not qualify? Why does it not qualify for the critical illness claim? Question that was asked. Why does carcinoma in situ of the prostate not qualify for critical illness claims? We're going to take our call and then come back to you for the answer to that question. Good evening. Welcome to the Better Health Radio Show. Reminding you to turn your radio down.
Good evening, Dr. Boss and all others.
Yes, hi, good evening.
Good evening.
This is to Dr. Emptage. And Dr. Emptage, I would like to know that all of these things that you're talking about, they're all being done. Does the penis now live in a south pole? Did you ever get a chance to take a trip from the south pole? 5, 10, or 15 degrees north or northeast of it?
Ma'am, are you asking me, let me make sure I'm clear here, are you asking me what is the erectile capability of the individual? After surgery, for the individual who has what Dr. Boyce is calling carcinoma in situ, there's never been any sort of difficulty in terms of my practice and the practices here of achieving sort of insurance coverage for that. Because that's the only way to cover. You can't really look to cover disease that has spread. If a man comes to surgery, I go with the Memorial Sloan Kettering sort of attitude with regards to potency. 33% potent, 33% partially potent, and 33% impotent. It means, therefore, that at least you got a 66% chance that you may need pharmacological support to have your erections. No, doctor,
what I was asking more, not so much about the insurance part. I want to know, how does this man feel? Does he think when my life is over, the only soul full I will ever be, or should I become a monk?
Oh, they got medications to bring you back to 6 o'clock, not 6:30. Don't worry about that. And even if you can get the 10 to 6, you're useful.
I'm sure a lot of men and women out there are wondering, what will happen?
Absolutely, my love, and I'm glad you raised the question.
Thank you.
It was on my list. It was on my list.
Thank you so much, caller. Doc, before you go to our agent here from Guardian Life of the Caribbean, let's take a word from Guardian Life of the Caribbean.
Life is good, but the right coverage makes it so much better. Presidia means power, protection, and freedom to do the things you love. Presidia, the personal accident coverage that lets you live your best life. Today. Call your Guardian Life agent today or 430-4675 and live easy.
Better Health Radio Show brought to you the kind compliments of Guardian Life of the Caribbean. Doc?
So we are in this evening discussing prostate cancer. We have Dr. Jerry Emptage. He's a urologist here in Barbados. He's been a urologist for several decades. A very knowledgeable doctor.
But that old. Come.
Who is in denial at present. And we also have Mr. Carl Spartan with us. He is one of the agents from Guardian Life of the Caribbean. And before the break, Carlos, we had asked about whether or not persons with the diagnosis of carcinoma in situ of the prostate would have been able to get critical illness coverage. Is that so? And if it is not, why not?
Right. To answer that question, I think one part of the question also before the break was if carcinoma in situ, or is it not covered by the critical illness plan?
Mm-hmm.
So, well, I'm not a doctor, but I feel inspired today by Dr. Emtish to take a gamble at it, which is, he can correct me at any point if I'm wrong, but carcinoma in situ, I believe that's the group of abnormal cells, but they're still remaining in place of where they are at the moment, right? Which is what he would have spoken about, that they're still in the garrison. They're not in Black Rock yet. So because they haven't moved as yet, yes, they can become cancerous and can spread to other normal tissue, but they haven't as yet. So it's not diagnosed as cancer. So based on the critical illness plan, it's not cancer as yet. So until it becomes... Yes, please, sir. Correct me at
Carlos,
any point.
No. Carlos, you got to be careful there. You got to be careful.
Correct me at any point.
What it is, carcinoma in situ is an interesting term that we don't really discuss carcinoma in situ of the prostate.
Mm-hmm.
You either have cancer or you don't. The key here, the differential here, Dr. Boyce, is this. Carcinoma in situ suggests very early disease. Now, the lowest grade, when you grade prostate cancer, you grade it on the basis of a Gleason score. So the pathologist looks at a block of cancer and he gives the worst part of it a score out of 5 and the best part of it a score out of 5. The earliest grade that he can design is the Gleason 6. So all he sees is 3 out of 5 plus 3 out of 5. That's grade group 1. Then he looks at it again, or he looks at another specimen, and he finds that the predominant is 3 out of 5, but he has a small population of 4 out of 5. That now becomes Gleason 7 out of 10, with the predominant being 3 out of 5, the minority being 4 out of 5, and that becomes grade group 2. Now, when he looks at another specimen, he sees a grade group. Now, he sees the predominant there is 4 out of 5, but he sees a minority at 3 out of 5. So that is grade, that is 7 out of 10, but now that becomes grade group 3. So now you're getting up. Now, when you start to hit grade group 3, you're running into increased potential for metastatic disease. So carcinoma in situ, I think that really and truly that should be done away for the conversation, because there is no such, you know, in the individual with a Gleason 3 plus 3, 6 out of 10. As I told you before, that individual who has 1 or 2 foci of prostate cancer at a clear and distinct 6 out of 10, in a small prostate, we're 12 cores only to show 2 zones, which means that the sample error is small. That individual is subject to, he can very well benefit from surveillance. Most of these individuals will find, you know, they will not sort of progress. A lot of the, especially in the older men. Now that is where the whole concept of the MRI fusion and the varipath biopsy, to go back to that sector biopsy. If you want to call that carcinoma in situ, I have no difficulty with that. But let's say a man comes to me, I took 12 pieces from him, and he has 7 cores of 6 out of 10. I have a problem with that. He has to be treated. You with me? But as I said, you got to be careful with carcinoma in situ, because that's going to confuse patients, because people with disease confined to the prostate are dealt with the insurance companies quite clearly across the board. Never had any issues with them, because those are the ones that will come to seed implants, that will come to radical surgery. And the insurance companies don't give any problems with that at all.
Right, which is why I'm glad that you said what you just said in terms of the term of carcinoma in situ, because we can only operate based on what the doctor diagnosed.
Absolutely.
So the doctor has to clearly state exactly what is going on.
Precisely.
So in the scenario of that, the same thing he said, you have to deal with that language. You have to specify to us when you come with the doctor's diagnosis, get him to blatantly say what it is and what it is that you're diagnosed with. Because we can only go based on that. Because I said earlier, we just said we are not doctors. We go by what the doctor says.
One more point, Dr. Boyce, though. When you look at the term carcinoma in situ with regards to the bladder, now that is a dangerous beast. That is dangerous. That will become, you know, sessile bladder cancer. And that has metastatic potential and progression potential. I mean, that is out of this world. So the only thing that I know about with regards to urology that concerns me with regards to carcinoma in situ is the bladder.
Okay.
All right, Doc. Well, let me interrupt you for a second here for two reasons.
Sure.
One, I've got a query for the doctor, and I've got a query for the insurance agent there. And I'll just read them as I see them here. It says, good night. As a new listener to this program, you can't get a job letter after 50. Can you be insured after 50? That's the question. That's what the person says. And they say they're a new listener, and yes, they're a working person and they're listening. So that's the question. Can you get insurance after 50? That's one. That's for our insurance personnel. And the other question says, is there any medication that can break up stones in the bladder? That's what they ask. So is that a fair question?
It is.
So there you go. Those are the two questions.
Yeah, let Carlos go first.
Okay. Carlos.
All right, so the question of if you can get an insurance after 50, the answer to that is yes. Yes, you can. And it depends on, well, today we're speaking to critical illness, but life insurance period, yes, you can get life insurance up to most ages, I would say. But even if you're over the limit of the specified age for the particular thing you're going for, it still recommend you can still apply, because everything is situational. So it's not set in stone that just because it said, oh, it may be to age 67 or 50 or 65, that you can't get it. So my advice to you is still reach out to an agent, contact them, and take it on a case-by-case basis. It can still be possible for you. But yes, over 50, you can definitely get insurance.
Wonderful.
Yeah, sorry to interject here, but there's something else I heard the writer put there, that you can't get a job letter after age 50.
I don't know.
Because once you're employed, you should be able to get a job letter. So please check that out with your employer and your company policies.
Yeah, that's what the person
go
said.
Ahead, Dr. Emtage. Go ahead, Dr. Emtage, with your breaking up stones by medication.
There is essentially, there are stones that are usually formed, let's say, in an individual who has a longstanding indwelling catheter. Yep, and you can use in solution G, but which we don't have in Barbados, and that is basically given as bladder installations to break up that. But bona fide bladder stones are the result of a problem. If you got a fast moving stream, there is going to be no moss formed on the stones. If you got a slow moving stream, they got enough moss. It's the same thing like the bladder. If you are not emptying your bladder well because of a stricture or an enlarged prostate, and you are carrying increased post-void residual urines. In other words, when you go to pass your water, you don't empty your bladder, you leave some. If you are so predisposed to stone formation, you will form stones. So there's nothing that's going to break them up, because essentially they are the result of a problem and not a cause. Now, at the end of the day, what can happen is that if there are numerous stones, you can have an open procedure to take them out. Or you can have, by and large, something like lithotripsy to go. You go up there, you use either a laser or an electrohydraulic probe to break them up, and you suck the fragments out. Now, oftentimes with those individuals, you have to basically do something about the prostate as well to make sure that you bring back proper emptying of the bladder. If that is not done, every fragment that stays into the bladder will become a stone in a matter of time. So you start with 4, you do that, you may end up with 40. So the bona fide bladder stone, there's nothing essentially that you can use to break it up, other than, as I said, calcification as a result of a long-term stent or a catheter, and the debris that is collected and the calcification of the cut. You can use solution G, which we don't have here.
Okay, Dr. Emtage, we've got another query for you. This one says, hi, Gredston. I love this health show. It is very informative. I was treated for prostate cancer in the USA with radiation 14 years ago. Ask the doctor if they do radiation here. So, Doc, what say you?
Yeah. We do radiation. I do seed implants. Last week, we did a whole batch of them. Where what happens is that you put radioactive pellets into the prostate. And this is for low-grade, low-volume T2 disease. You're not going to treat this with, a young man comes with 4 cores of prostate cancer with a Gleason 8 or 9 out of 10. He needs surgery. But individuals with small-volume, low-grade disease who do not have large prostates can have seed implants. And we have the data on this. The outcomes are similar to surgery, essentially over 10, 20, 30 years. That's one way. And then the other way is external beam radiation. The problem that we have here with external beam radiation is that we have essentially old technology, which is a cobalt machine. So in other words, if you look at your prostate as the garrison and you got 5 wild horses on the garrison, you decide you want no surgery, no seeds, you want external beam. But currently with what we have here, you would have to radiate from Beckles Road to St. Matthias Gap to kill these 4 horses from the garrison, which means that the side effect profile is going to be quite high. Now, what the world uses is something called a linear accelerator, which instead of using like radiation, like when they take an X-ray from you, which is what we have, they use foci of electrons. So they can focus the tumor. And as a result now, what they can use is give a higher dose of 7,900. When we do seed implants, we can give up to 21,000 rads or 21 Gy, which is 3 times what can be delivered at the QBH, which is only 6,000 rads. So the technology now is changing with radiation. There's something called rapid arc, which is a linear accelerator basically on steroids. So they can, using software, they can give you, instead of radiating you every day, 5 days a week for 6 to 7 weeks with a high side effect profile, using a rapid arc machine, they can give it to you over 2 to 3 weeks.
Okay, I have a question for Carlos about the treatment for prostate cancer. But some person who, for example, hears that diagnosis, you know, you have prostate cancer, can they still qualify for life insurance?
That's a very good question. As I said in my previous response, nothing is necessary in stone. But in most scenarios, that person may not get life insurance. However, what usually happens is, for example, on the critical illness plan, you would get your payout, you go and get a treatment, and in some cases, you may be deemed as cancer-free, or the cancer may go into remission. At that point, you can then reapply, or you can apply for life insurance, and there's a possibility that you may be able to get it. But as I said before, it's a case-by-case basis. But in most circumstances, no, you won't be able to qualify for life insurance.
Okay, so we hope that our listeners have heard that. But again, the reminder is the fundamental point. Don't just assume. Go in and have that talk with the insurance agent.
Let me just add quick there, Dr. Boyce, too.
Sure.
I do have clients in my portfolio who have had cancer in the past and still are eligible for life insurance and still do have life insurance coverage to this day. So as I said, it's a case-by-case basis. You should still contact your agent and still see what is possible.
So we're going to get a word.
Yes, from our sponsors. Yes, we are going to do that. But we've got 2 things to take care of as well. We've got a caller on the line. So when we behind the word from our sponsor, we'll come back to the caller because we're getting shy on time. And also the query you're asking about job letter, the WhatsApp actually said job after 50. Get a job after 50 as opposed to job letter. So that was not his or her error. That was my error. So it's job after 50. So we'll just make that correction there. That's one. Let me just remind you that we're listening to the Better Health Radio Show. It's brought to you the kind compliments of Guardian Life of the Caribbean.
Life is good, but the right coverage makes it so much better. Presidia means power, protection, and freedom to do the things you love. Presidia, the personal accident coverage that lets you live your best life. Today. Call your Guardian Life agent today or 430-4675 and live easy.
All right, we're getting small on time, so let's go straight to the caller. Good evening. Welcome to the Better Health Radio Show.
Braxton, good evening to you. Dr. Boyce, good evening to you and your guest.
Hi, good evening.
I have 2 questions, one for the insurance guy and one for Dr. Antage. I'll start with the insurance. If I have the regular health insurance and I wanted to extend my insurance by incorporating the group, the critical care insurance. By the insurance that I'm, the health insurance that I'm in, I'm still in it from my workplace and I've retired. Would I have to go back to my workplace to have that insurance extended, or it can come into Guardian Life and do it on my own?
The health insurance is what you're speaking to, right? Getting it extended?
I have health insurance.
Right, so you want it.
So if I wanted to extend it to incorporate the critical care insurance, I want to know if I would have to go back to my former workplace because I'm still in the insurance with them. and Guardian. If I have to go back to them to get it extended or to add that critical insurance, or I can come into the insurance company and do it myself?
Oh, that's a good question. No, that's something you can do on your own, because the critical illness plan would be something specifically for you. So it's not something that you have to go back to your workplace and get their permission or anything to do. That's something you do solely on your own. As I said, just contact your agent or contact Guardian, and they will take it from there for you.
Yeah, obviously that would come with an addition to the premium.
Yes, it will come with an addition to the premium.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Now, the other question I have is for Dr. Entish. Good evening to you, Doc.
How are you, sir?
I'm trying to stay as focused as the good Lord would allow me.
There you go.
And I would say I'm doing pretty hard. But, Doc, I want to ask you this question.
Sure.
As I hear listening to you, and I am listening to all this technology that we have, and the good brains like yours, then why are so many men in this country dead for prostate cancer?
You got to be very careful with that, buddy, because that's not necessarily true. There are some individuals, look, it goes like this. You don't want somebody to tell you that you got prostate cancer because you cannot pass your water or because you're bleeding. That's too late.
Right.
If you look after yourself and, you know, like how you look after your car, hopefully like how you look after your wife, you're going to be good. Make sure you do your PSA, get your checks. Your doctor, by and large, you know that the PSA above 4 shouldn't. If you go to your doctor and you got problems passing your water and it burning you and all that kind of thing, don't let him or her do the PSA. Let them treat you, come back when that has settled and do it. Now, that we have been able, that with all this technology, sir, with that we have been able to save people, it is clear. It is manifestly clear that we have been able to, yes, there are people who are going to die. Some of them essentially are found so late that all you're trying to do is to help them.
Prolong their life.
You with me? Yeah, prolong their life. Then you get situations where you do things for them and they do well and then they don't listen to the follow-ups. You have cancer. I ain't God. I can't tell you that I cure you. Any doctor tell you he cure you, tell he go a flat kite. He got to follow you and make sure that you are not slipping out, you know, of the pages of that book called Cure, as can happen, as I just outlined. But if you are slipping out of the pages of that book and it is picked up early, there are salvage therapies to keep you living.
But what I just told you is something that is commonly said in this country, that prostate kills the most men and breast cancer kills a lot of women. And that's something that it is.
You're absolutely correct. The two most common cancers, breast and colon in women, prostate and colon in men. But you gotta look, once you look after yourself and you got the good Lord for yourself, you're gonna be all right. Look after yourself though. Don't expect you to look after you.
But what's a good PSA?
A good PSA? How old you? Wait, you go, I can't even tell you how old you is by the phone. Listen to me. If you're up to 65,
I'm 66 though.
You don't want nothing past 5.
The last time I did my PSA was, I think, 1 or 2 point, a little bit.
Be a boss and no galah, then you ain't gonna dead for that.
Thank you, caller.
All right, Doc. Thanks.
All right, my brother.
All right, I want to read very quickly because time is really getting away from us, and there were some calls going whilst that caller was there. I want to encourage our listeners, if they can, to get in earlier rather than later, because when it comes down to the home stretch, then we have to give way to another program, you see. So we missed 1 or 2 calls and 1 or 2 questions here via the WhatsApp. This one says, I'm going to read it just as I see it because sometimes it leaves me baffled as to what they're asking, but let's hope the doctor can understand. What is the position in respect liquid biopsy? I believe they mean in respect to liquid biopsy, which cancer support introduced on the 19th of August. Does that ring a bell to you, Dr. Emtich? What is the position?
Liquid biopsy is essentially, are you looking basically at genomics? What you're looking at is the genetics of the individual. And the idea is essentially that there are characteristic genomic changes with malignancies. Yeah? in the individual. So what happens is if you can test individuals, you look for the abnormalities in the genomics, you can actually pick up the disease before it becomes evident. When that happens, then you can identify on this focus of the cancer, which the patient doesn't recognize that he or she has. And then what you do is you label it with a radioisotope based on an antigen, a receptor on the cell, and you send the isotope to just kill that. So that is where we are going with the whole concept of genomics and liquid biopsies. Remember, there's big data, and that can only come out of, what is interesting, that will only come out of a place like China, where there's a large population. Because don't forget, big data and liquid biopsies, all of that is depending upon artificial intelligence.
All right.
It's just like the individual who has, it's just like the what they're doing now with alterations in the genome of HIV viruses to treat and cure sickle cell disease.
Yeah, there's a lot going on in the world of medicine.
Not a lot, you mean enough.
We've got
your next question, Grayson, before we wrap up.
Yeah, because the phone lines are lighting up, but fortunately we can't go to the phone lines now because it's the end of the program. We've got two other WhatsApp messages here that I will commit to doing, and we're way past the 7 o'clock hour. This one says, very interesting program. You have to bring back Dr. Imtiaz. So I guess, Dr. Boyce, that one's for you. Very interesting program. You have to bring back Dr. Imtiaz. That's one. And the other one says, good evening to all, Dr. Imtiaz. I had a biopsy in 2017 and an MRI in 2019. Both show no cancer, but the PSA goes up and down. Sometimes PSA reads 7.5, then 10.5, other times 8 or 10. I am 60 years old. Why is the PSA going up and down?
Sir, if you are concerned about that, you need to do a 4K score.
Well, unfortunately, we don't have time
to explain what the
4K
that.
Score is. So he can do some more research or perhaps call Dr. Imtiaz himself or another urologist of his choice.
And absolutely.
Yes. We are so sorry that we have to wind up because this has been a very interesting discussion, but we are past the 7 o'clock hour. Carlos, thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome. Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Yes, and for those individuals who have any further queries about what's covered and what's not covered, you can certainly contact those agents over there at Guardian Life of the Caribbean. Can you give us the number, Carlos?
The number of Guardian Life of the Caribbean is 430-4652, or you can reach me at 850-4373.
Okay, thank you so very much. Dr. Imtiaz?
Tell that WhatsApp guy to make sure that with the MRI, that it was PIRADS graded. PIRADS, tell him to make sure of that.
I'm quite sure he heard you. So you heard that one.
All the best. Thanks very much for having me. If you need me again, I will come.
All right. Always a pleasure, Doc.
Good. All right. Bye bye.
Dr. Boyce.
And like that, Dr. Imtiaz is out and bad. Anyway, it has been wonderful as usual. Thank you for having us again, Grayson. Looking forward to being with you next week. We're going to be discussing the heart. So looking forward to having all of our listeners join us. Do have a wonderful evening, everyone.
Once again, thank you. That's Dr. Renee Boyce, and as our guest, she had Dr. Jerry Imtiaz and also Carlos Barton of Guardian Life of the Caribbean. I've got to say a big thank you again to Guardian Life of the Caribbean. They brought you this program, the Better Health Radio Show. Again, to our WhatsAppers and to our callers, we know that we have to give information before we actually invite your calls and your WhatsApp.
Hello?
However, we wish that you would get in as soon as possible because when it comes to the home stretch, we're not able to get in every call or every WhatsApp that wants to be answered on the program. So as soon as you possibly can, you WhatsApp or you call the program of the Better Health Radio Show. Until next weekend, Sunday at 6 o'clock, God spare our lives. We'll be back again right here on the Voice of Barbados, 92.9.